Vacation Bible School begins. Be here at 6:30 with the kids. And be sure you stick around for that musical. Jeff and Luke have already referred to it. It is a time of great fun in addition to the teaching. In fact, I am rather surprised that we have such good actors and singers. You don't get to hear the singing today. You're going to have to come back tomorrow night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night to hear the singers. But I wanted to give you just a little snippet or two to whet your appetite. King Xerxes, will you and your attendants please come on out?
And like, give us a minute.
We don't have a minute.
Kingdom will wait.
The king requests
the king's request, and as you'll find out during the play and as you read the book of Esther, when the king makes a request, it is a law. We have to accept that, have to obey it. Vashti certainly learned that. We will figure out, have you seen the soft shoe? The act one is one of the main acts as it sets the stage. In fact, in the very first part of what I'm going to be saying today, we get the basic point of what's going on. King Xerxes comes out. He does look kingly, though he's just a youth minister, really. Ouch. I tell you what, you'll be surprised when you hear him Monday night. That dude can sing. I didn't know that he could sing. He can. I think that one of the most important parts here is to get the fact that King Xerxes was a rich king. The whole Persian Empire had wealth. In the third year of his reign, he gave a party that lasted 180 days. And it was for all of his armies throughout the provinces, his noblemen and governors. After that was completed, he gave a second party, kind of a finale to the first, really, a seven-day party, and there he invited the entire population of the capital city of Susa. It was at that party that something happened. The party really had a southern flavor, maybe even a Texas flavor. Not barbecue, but you'll be surprised at what they were serving.
More sweet tea, sir?
Of course! Sweet tea all around!
No, thank you. I much prefer Dr. Pepper.
Then Dr. Pepper it is! Servants, make sure each man receives whatever refreshment he wishes.
Well, thank you.
Hail, King Xerxes!
Hail, King Xerxes!
May his kingdom be always extravagant.
Oh, guys, cut it out. You know, it's too much, really. But let's remember that luxury isn't everything. Who am I kidding? Luxury is everything.
At that point, he jumps up and bursts into song. And I tell you, he can sing. You'll want to hear him sing tomorrow night. Now, after he sings, he then sits down to think about how grand everything is, his riches, the beauty of his palace, and about someone who's beautiful.
All this splendor is nothing compared to the beauty of Queen Vashti. Servants!
Yes, Your Highness.
Go to Queen Vashti and tell her I request her presence at my banquet.
So the two servants will disappear. And tomorrow night, you'll see them come out over here where the queen was also holding a banquet. They make a request of her. We'll stop there. As they come back without her, that is a basic part of the whole plot.
You've returned! But where is Queen Vashti?
She isn't with us, Your Highness.
What do you mean she isn't with you? Did you not deliver my request?
Oh, we delivered your request, Your Highness. She wanted us to give this to you.
Oh, a love letter? How sweet. But of course it's no substitute for her actually, you know, being here. Let's see what it says. How dare she! This is unacceptable!
Appreciate your help in introducing. It was so unacceptable that his anger raged to the point that he removed her from being queen. She was no longer to see his presence. This king needs to be introduced to you. If you're using the New Revised Standard, which I happen to be carrying this morning, a relatively new translation, or if one of the older translations, then you'll find that his name is Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is a little bit hard to say, so we're going with his Persian name of Xerxes. There are a couple of other principal characters that you need to see in this story too. The very main one is Hadassah. And that's the way she's first introduced to us in the book. But Mordecai, her cousin, changed her name from a Hebrew name to a Persian name, and so everyone knows her as Esther. Mordecai was her cousin. He is introduced in the scripture as the great-grandson of Kish. Kish was carried away in the second carrying away, the second of three. As the Babylonians swept in and conquered Jerusalem, the southern kingdom, in 606, carried away a whole host of people. They came back in 597, and this time they carried away the king Jehoiachin, who is also known in the book of Esther, or introduced there, as Jeconiah. Carried him away, and with that carried Kish. We should note, in 586, they came back and flattened the city, destroyed the temple, broke down the wall. But it is Kish, then, who is carried away. He has a son named Shimei, who had a son named Jair, who had a son named Mordecai. We don't really know what happened to Esther's parents, Bihail, I think, and his wife, but they're gone. So Mordecai nobly raised Esther to be his own. There's one more principal character that we need to think about, but I really want to save his introduction for later on. He's Haman, an Agagite. In chapter 3, verse 10, he's introduced as the enemy of Israel. Now, King Xerxes ruled over 127 provinces. His kingdom spread all the way from India to Ethiopia. He was a great king, a mighty king, a feared king. It was in the third year of his reign that he gave that party. And I want you to know that this morning in the sermon and in the musical on those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights, we're going to move rather quickly, maybe even combining some scenes, because you don't want to be here as long as all of that took. It was in the third year that he gave the party. In the 12th year, the cruel edict that we'll talk about goes out. So obviously a big period of time has passed. The important thing for us to remember is that Esther is a story of the providence of God. I want to again and again and again this morning simply say the providence of God. If you carry nothing else away from the story of Esther, you don't have to remember that her name was first Hadassah. Just remember the providence of God. The king removed Vashti from being queen because she had refused that request. That's at the end of chapter 1. Chapter 2 begins by saying, after some time, his anger had abated. I always wondered how long it took him to cool off. Did it take just a week? Was it immediate? Some time later. Could it have been a couple of years? The scripture doesn't say. Then he decided that he needed a new queen. He had a harem, but he wanted a queen. And so he sent his couriers out through all those 127 provinces to ask for all of the beautiful young virgins to be brought. They were put in a harem that was overseen by a man by the name of Hegai. Hegai chose Esther as his favorite, the providence of God. All of the women were beautiful. There wasn't any reason why he should have chosen her, except the providence of God. All of those young virgins then were prepared for a full year before they got their turn to go in and spend the night with the king. 6 months of lotion, 6 months of perfume, surely some training regarding how to be queenly. When at last it came Esther's time to spend the night with King Xerxes, she took nothing with her except what Hegai recommended, and he knew the king. Esther was chosen. She would be the new queen. In addition to her then having an exalted position, her cousin Mordecai was given an exalted position. Maybe he already had that, as he was allowed to sit at the king's gate. And that's a position of honor. Maybe they did some governing, maybe some judging over people who brought cases. Know that it was a position of honor to have a seat at the king's gate. Because of his position there, he overheard a story from two of the king's chamberlain. The two chamberlain, Bigthana and Teresh, planned to assassinate the king. He simply gave that word to Esther. She gave it to her husband, and those two men were hanged. Everything was going nicely then for the Jews, for Mordecai, for Esther, until about the 11th year of his reign, he decided to elevate a man by the name of Haman to be the chief of all of his noblemen. In fact, he wanted him honored so much that he wanted everybody, including the other noblemen, to bow when he passed by. I'm glad to say that in the presentation on the knights in the musical, we don't bow like they did. They fell on their faces on the ground. Fortunately, Leah doesn't require that of us. We just bow to him as he walks by. Everyone bowed to him. Everyone honored him, except Mordecai. He refused to bow down to him. And if you'll pick up a commentary and read, you'll find pages written on why did Mordecai refuse. Let me point out that he is introduced as an Agagite. Agag was king of the Amalekites. When the people of Israel had finished their wilderness wanderings, and at last under the direction of God, under the leadership of Moses, left the wilderness and made their way around the Dead Sea, the Amalekites attacked them. They were weak, helpless, didn't have an army. God gave them the victory anyway, but he said those Amalekites will pay one day. So when the nation was established and Saul had a big army, God told Samuel to tell Saul to go down and slay the Amalekites, destroy them utterly. Evidently, not all of them were in the country or in the cities that were destroyed at that point. There were some who got away. This would mean then that there were several of those people who would naturally be enemies of Israel. The king of the Amalekites was Agag. Samuel ended up confronting Saul because Saul brought him back alive. It enraged Samuel, and Samuel was the one, the prophet, who drew a sword and killed Agag. The commentators will tell you that the term Agag became a name for all of the kings of that area, such as Caesar or Pharaoh. The Roman emperors all call themselves Caesar. The Egyptian kings call themselves Pharaohs. The Amalekite kings were Agag. This man was an Agagite. Why was he so proud? He had royal blood in him. He was of the kingly family, so he was arrogant. And not only arrogant, chapter 3, verse 10 introduces him as the enemy of Israel. Admittedly, that is after this decree that we're about to notice. But was he an enemy because of the decree? Or was the decree partially motivated because of his long-standing people's animosity toward Israel? I think that Mordecai knew Haman to be an arrogant, proud, evil man, and he refused to bow down before him. For a while, it seems like Haman didn't even recognize that. But as people will, people pointed out, he isn't bowing to you, that Jew Mordecai. And as soon as he found out that he was a Jew, the scripture says he thought it was belittle of himself to take out his vengeance on just that one man. He would take it out on the entire nation that was there in the Persian Empire, the Jewish people. He gathered his advisors and they drew up a plan and they cast lots for the day for that plan to be carried out. And then he took it before the king. King Xerxes, there is a people scattered among your provinces who do not recognize you properly. They live by different laws. It's not good for your kingdom that they should be continued to exist. Now therefore, if it pleases the king, I will write a decree that says all of the Persians are to rise up against their Jewish neighbors and slaughter them. Kill them all and take their possessions. Now, the scripture says that King Xerxes thought he was looking out for his good. He went so far as to say, I myself will put 10,000 talents of silver into the king's treasury to see that this is accomplished. Because obviously, it would cost something to send out couriers throughout 127 provinces. The day that was chosen for that decree to reach its fulfillment was the 13th day of the 12th month. This timing is significant. That was brought before the king, and the decree was made in the first month. From the first month to the 12th month, you've got plenty of time for the couriers to get out, and then, as we're about to discover, for couriers to go out a second time with another decree. I see the providence of God in the very casting of lots and it falling on the 12th month and the 13th day. The king gave his signet ring to Haman. Write the decree. Make it the law. And there we need to remember something that was peculiar about the constitution of the Persians. An odd, foolish law. That once a decree was written and the king's signet ring went on it, it could not be altered. That decree went out. Mordecai saw it. He had a copy of it. He was in sackcloth. Every day he would walk back and forth in front of the queen's palace so that Esther could look out and see him and see that he was doing well. This day didn't look so good. He was in sackcloth, mourning. What's gone wrong? She sent one of her chamberlain out to ask him, what's happened? He told her about the decree. In fact, he gave her a copy of that decree. He told her, you are in this position now. You are the one who is to go into the king and beg for the lives of your people. She sent back word by that chamberlain, every man and woman in the empire knows you don't go before the king uninvited. If you do, unless he holds out the golden scepter, the guards kill you immediately. She added, I haven't been called before the king for 30 days. What can I do? Then you heard my granddaughter, Olivia, read just a moment ago of the answer that came back. She said, don't you think that you're going to escape just because you're in the king's palace? If you don't do what you can, deliverance will arise from another source. See his confidence in the providence of God. Deliverance will arise. God will provide. Providence. He added, but as for you and your father's house, woe to you. That's what the older version says. Olivia said, you'll be killed. And then perhaps the most famous statement of the book of Esther, and who knows but that you are come to the kingdom for just such a time as this, come to royalty, one translation even says made queen for just such a time as this. Don't overstate that. He isn't saying that God looked down through time and saw what was going to happen and put you there just for this occasion. He knew that God's people were always persecuted. They had been throughout the time that they were in Persia. They were the enemy of the Agagites, and therefore, they would be persecuted in some way, and that such a time as this would arise, and by the providence of God, she would be there and in position to help. You'll have to admire Esther as she sent back word, gather all the Jews in the city of Susa. Fast for 3 days. I and my maidens will also fast. And at the end of those 3 days, I'll go into the king. And if I die, I die. Those 3 days passed. She prepared herself and went in before the king. The golden scepter was held out to her. The scripture says she moved forward until she touched the tip of it. Queen Esther, what is your petition? What is your request? It will be granted to you unto the half of my kingdom. Do you think that he really meant he would give half of those 127 provinces to her? Or was it just an expression of how much he loved her? He's going to end up saying that 3 times. He must have been surprised on this first time when she simply answered, my petition, O king, if I have found favor in your sight, is that you and your nobleman Haman would come to a banquet that I prepared for you this night. We'll be there. He didn't even check with Haman. You get your schedule ready. We will be there. It was a fine banquet. I'm sure that everyone was enjoying it. And the king said, Queen Esther, what is your petition? What is your request? It'll be granted you to the half of my kingdom. She wasn't ready. She said, O king, my petition, my request, if I have found favor in your sight, is that you and Haman will come to another banquet that I will prepare for you tomorrow evening. We will be there. The king knew that she hadn't risked her life in order to invite him to dinner. He also knew that if he wanted to find out, he would play the game. I see the providence of God. Haman went out of that banquet so full of himself, walking on cloud nine, couldn't be more wonderful. And then he saw Mordecai. Mordecai didn't bow down. His day, so glorious, was ruined. He went home and he gathered his wife and the friends and his 10 sons that he brags about. And he tells them how rich he is, how many honors he's had, how he has 10 sons. And no one in all of the empire was invited to dine with the king and queen except himself. And then he says, but all of this is nothing as long as that Jew Mordecai won't bow down to me. Zeresh, his wife, had an answer. She said, if that's all standing in your way, you have the ear of the king. Go ask for permission to hang him. Hang him high so that everyone can see what happens to a person who disrespects you. He liked that so much that he set his workers to building that very night. Right then. He was a rich man. Remember, 10,000 talents of silver was put into the king's treasury just to carry out an edict. He evidently had a large number of workers because they, in one night, built a gallows 75 feet high in his courtyard. 75 feet, you realize the significance of that? That's about twice as tall as this church building. 75 feet, hey, hang them high, I suppose. The next night, they were there at the banquet. Oh, but wait, I almost missed something. While those workers were building at his palace, something was going on at the king's palace. The king couldn't sleep. The providence of God. And when the king couldn't sleep, somebody else didn't get to sleep. He called for some of his servants to read to him the record of his reign, the annals of his kingdom. They were reading different events, and then they came to one about how two of his servants, Bigthana and Teresh, had planned to assassinate him, and how that a man who sat at the gate, Mordecai, had told Esther, she told him, and so the plot was discovered. He had those two men hanged. He stopped the reader to say, what was done to honor this Mordecai? I can imagine that even the readers were embarrassed as they came back saying, nothing. Nothing was done. He probably was thinking about what he needed to do when he realized his need for an advisor. Is there anyone here this morning? It's very early in the morning. And Haman had come early in the morning to make his request. Haman is here in the outer court. Send him in, he said. Haman, what is to be done to the man that the king wishes to honor? Chapter 6 spells it out that Haman thought, now who would he be wanting to honor more than his chief nobleman? And so he came up with a plan. O king, let this be done. Take this person you want to honor and put a royal robe on him. Put your crown on him. Put him on one of the horses that you ride, and then get one of your highest noblemen to lead him through the streets of the city, saying, thus shall be done to the man that the king wishes to honor. I suppose then that Haman was extremely surprised when he said, Haman, you go get Mordecai, the Jew who sits at the king's gate, and do exactly what I said. Don't leave out anything. When Haman finished his horrible day, he went home despondent. He gathered all of his friends, his sons, his wife together again and told them what a terrible day it had happened. Zeresh said, "If this man before whom you have begun to fall is of the Jewish people, you'll surely be brought down." Now, just at that point, couriers arrived to say, "It's time to go. It's time to go to the banquet." Once again, the table was spread fabulously. And during the meal, there came the time for the king to say, "Queen Esther, what is your petition? What is your request? It will be granted you to the half of my kingdom." "My petition, O king, is for my life. My request is for my people. For we have been sold to be slain. If we had been sold into slavery, I would have held my peace. But we have been sold to be annihilated. And who then will repay the king for the loss of all of these servants?" And the king's anger flared as he said, "Who would do such a thing? Who would lay such a plan?" She said, "That evil Haman." The king in his anger got up to walk in the garden, maybe trying to cool off. It didn't work. And furthermore, the scripture says that Haman knew the way that Xerxes looked at him, that he was going to kill him. As soon as he left, he fell on the couch where Esther was, pleading for his life. I remind you that they didn't sit in chairs like we do when we're eating. They lay on couches, a low couch probably. He was actually then on Esther when Xerxes came back in. "Will he assault my queen in my very house?" One of the chamberlain by the name of Harbona evidently didn't like this Haman very much, and so he volunteered. "He built a gallows in his courtyard 75 feet high, and he came this morning intending to ask your permission to hang Mordecai on it." Quick came the response, "Hang him on it." And so the evil man was gone. But the decree still stood. It couldn't be altered. Esther appeared before the king once again. He didn't know what he could do. But by the providence of God, he took off his signet ring and gave it to Mordecai and said, "Write what you will." Somehow, Mordecai came up with a plan. The providence of God, that said on the 13th day of the 12th month, all of the Jews are to defend themselves. They are to kill their enemies, but not take any of their property. Word was sent out through all of the land. Couriers once again had time to go out because of that period of time from the first month to the 12th month. The word went out and all of the king's officials recognized what was going on. The king really didn't want that first command carried out, and they refused to participate in any kind of animosity toward the Jewish people. On the 13th day of the 12th month, the Jews rose up against their enemies, and in Susa alone, 500 of their enemies were slain. At the end of that day, Esther came before the king. "Queen Esther, is there anything else I can do? Is there anything else that you would request? I've killed Haman. I've given your people permission to defend themselves." She said, "There is something you can do. You can cut off this lineage of Haman. You can kill his 10 sons. And you can give the Jews another day to fight against their enemies." Those 10 sons of Haman were hanged high also. And on the 14th day of the 12th month, 300 more of the enemies of Israel were killed. Mordecai then wrote a decree that said all of the Jews are to celebrate this great deliverance on the 15th day of the 12th month, year after year. And that feast, the Feast of Purim, extends even down to this day. The latter part of the 9th chapter tells of how that Mordecai was elevated to a lofty position. Haman's position, well, not quite. He went out robed in purple. Furthermore, the king gave Esther Haman's rich estate, and she gave it to Mordecai. And then the 10th chapter has only 3 verses, and it says that he was elevated to that lofty position and peace reigned. Throughout the story of Esther, God is not mentioned. There are four students and Miss Millie teaching class in the center section in the musical each night. One of the children is surprised. God isn't mentioned. How can you have a book of the Bible not about God? It is about God. He isn't mentioned. But his handprints are all throughout the book. It is a story of providence. I believe that the reason we have the story of Esther brought down to us today is for us to remember God has always taken care of his people. He has always provided deliverance for his people. The same thing is true today. We don't fight against an evil man. We fight against the devil. It isn't that we're about to be sold to be killed. It is that our enemy today wants us in hell for eternity. But the good news is God provides for his people. He provides deliverance. And furthermore, you can be a part of God's people. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 13 talks about how the people were baptized into the one body. You today can be baptized into the one body, into the people who enjoy God's protection. Our elders are going to be at the back. You're invited to go back if you have a point of prayer. But if you're ready to confess your faith in Jesus and be baptized into Christ, into his people, into his protection, make your way to the front as we stand and sing.